Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. Heather Vokush is our guest this time. You may have seen her diverse writing in Common Dreams and other publications. Heather Vokush is presently working on a book for progressives. Her website is heathervokush.com. That's spelled HEATHERWOKUSCH.com. In today's interview, we take a look at her February 19th piece, World War III or Bust, Implications of a U.S. Attack on Iran. Originally from California, Heather Vokush has toured Asia and Europe, where we're reaching her now. Heather Vokush, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Heather, talk about the meaning of your title.
I don't intend to say that we immediately are going to, you know, go into World War III next month or something. However, I really do believe that the policies that are in place now are both highly destructive, and their destructive potential is intensifying very quickly. And especially given what is going on in Iran, or potentially could be going on, that could really prove a lightning rod. And so that was my intention in writing the article, one, to talk about some of the ulterior motives behind the Bush administration's desire, you could say, to attack Iran, and mainly also to talk about some of the repercussions if that actually did happen, to get people thinking about it and talking about it.
They certainly are talking about it. I understand you've had quite a response to this piece. Talk about that and what kinds of things people are saying as they contact you.
Well, this piece has been interesting because it has appeared on more websites than I believe any of my articles ever had in the past. You mentioned Common Dreams, also Truth Out and Global Research and Citizens for a Legitimate Government, Information Clearinghouse, on and on across the board. And the reactions that I have gotten, I've gotten perhaps a couple hundred emails per day, I would put it that way, from all over the world, from, you know, so-called conservatives, you know, to so-called liberals, across the board. And people are saying, quote, I have gotten the same quote many times, your article scared the crap out of me. This I've heard more than once. I've gotten two main reactions. One, denial. Primarily people from the United States saying, no, this is impossible, because as I mentioned in the article, I will just read one sentence. The under orders from Vice President Dick Cheney's office, the Pentagon has developed, quote, last resort, end quote, aerial assault plans using long-distance B-2 bombers and submarine-launched ballistic missiles with both conventional and nuclear weapons. And that's the thing. A lot of people are saying, no, our country doesn't have nuclear weapons, and it isn't legal for us to use them anyway. And the other reaction I've gotten is from people who say, oh my goodness, this is just horrible, but I feel very disempowered. I don't know what to do. And so those have been the two main reactions.
Now, you're also essentially suggesting here that the U.S. is bending information on some of the longstanding concerns about the possibility of an Iranian bomb. Just talk about the difference in the two descriptions that Iran could develop a bomb and Iran is developing a bomb and will have it soon.
Well, for example, the U.S. intelligence agencies basically believe that Iran is between 3 and 10 years away from being able to manufacture a nuclear weapon. So this is not something that is urgent right now. This is something that is in the future. And arguably, there are better ways of dealing with it than certainly through some military attack. If we look at the history of what's going on here, in late 2003, the U.S. said that Tehran was seeking to build nuclear weapons. Okay. And then November 2004, Iran said, okay, voluntarily, we will have a temporary halt to our uranium enrichment program. But they didn't really get any carrots. They got a lot of sticks. And so in August 2005, they said, okay, we're going to resume our enrichment program. Now, the interesting thing now is Iran actually is not in non-compliance with the Non-Proliferation Treaty. The media is leading us to believe otherwise, but it is not in non-compliance. What this whole International Atomic Energy Agency decision was in this month was that they have decided that the Director General Mohammed El-Baradei will report to the Security Council about transparency measures for Iran. Now, these are over and above the normal NPT obligations. And so it's really important to keep in mind that they haven't actually done anything wrong as far as the NPT yet, and to keep this in mind when the media kind of, you know, makes it a gray area.
Now, we've seen a lot of warnings about Iran and developments along these lines over the past year, with some analysts warning that the pressure and rhetoric from the U.S. is actually having a negative impact on Iran and decisions about security that are being made by people like Ahmadinejad. Just talk about the climate in Iran and how the rhetoric from America might impact events there.
As a part of your question also, one might need to ask, is that actually the plan to kind of inflame tensions and to get, you know, conflict brewing? Or is that an accident, or is that the plan? There's a very important part of this that we need to look at, and that is that in March, well, next month, Iran has made the announcement that it is going to open a petro-euro oil trading market. And what that means is that Iran can trade oil in euros instead of dollars. And if this happens, this would also allow the OPEC countries to do the same thing. And this is something that could be extremely dangerous for the U.S. economy. And so many analysts believe that this whole thing about nuclear weapons is just, you know, a facade, and the real goal is to be sure that Iran does not open this bursa. If we think back to Iraq, for example, you know, in late 2000, Saddam Hussein announced that he wanted euros for his oil, and he also converted his $10 billion reserve fund at the UN into euros. And so many speculated that, in fact, one of the major reasons that the U.S. invaded Iraq was because of, you know, trying to change the oil trading into euros. And so we've got this coming up next month, and that's really highly significant. You know, another thing coming up next month is we've got the Israeli elections, March 28th, I believe. They will be deciding the 17th Knesset. And, of course, the whole issue about Iran is also very big in Israel, and so there's just yet another piece of the puzzle.
Heather, when we look at financial issues for America, and in fact we see an AP Wire story coming out just today, February 22nd, that Japan will provide the U.S. with funds so that it might remove its troops from their country. And this implies, again, a level of desperation. What kind of an impression is this climate of potential economic disaster for America impacting the world, actually? What kind of an impression is this making, do you think, globally? I mean, it seems this could open up all sorts of situations where people have to now change their contingency plans, change their alliances.
Oh, indeed. And also, you can imagine that people aren't that terribly excited about holding on to a lot of dollars either. But, you know, we can look at some numbers. As I mentioned in the article, the U.S. trade deficit reached a record high of $725.8 billion in 2005. Yet, the Bush administration's fiscal year 2000 budget proposes increasing deficits by $192 billion over the next 5 years. So we're not exactly tightening our belts. And as I recall, you said that you are coming out of the University of Connecticut. Well, there's something for students and anybody involved in education to consider also. Currently, the United States is spending almost $7 billion a month on military operations only in Afghanistan and Iraq. Now, combine that with the fact that discretionary spending for education for the fiscal year 2007 budget is only going to be around $55 billion. Well, what this means, basically, is that in fiscal year 2007, the administration is proposing to spend $30 billion more dollars on military operations in Afghanistan and Iraq than for all of the education things with a discretionary spending education funds in the United States. Now, you've got to ask, where are our priorities? And, you know, another thing that I should mention that's going to happen next month in relation to your question is that it's expected that the United States will hit its debt ceiling of a little bit over $8 trillion next month. That's an absolute record debt ceiling already, and that means they're going to have to just increase that. And so it really looks as if we are heading towards a different kind of Armageddon, you could say, economically. And we need to really look at this as a country, and we need to have some, you know, sound economic policies in place, and it's just not happening.
It seems as if there has never been a time when trust in a U.S. leader has been this low. So when we look at that aspect of it, it makes it all the worse to think that this is an administration now dealing with a sense of desperation about our economy.
Yes, and in fact, I started the article saying that witnessing the Bush administration's drive for an attack on Iran is like being a passenger in a car with a raving drunk at the wheel. Because that's, for me, how it feels. It's like, oh my goodness, this is like this white-knuckle ride, and we don't know what we're doing. Another element of what you just said is it's not only, of course, the Bush administration, but we have individuals such as Dick Cheney and also Defense Secretary Rumsfeld. And he just released the Pentagon's defense review that they do every 4 years. And he's calling for this infinite long war, and our military should operate around the globe. And you really get the sense that this guy is not interested very much in pursuing anything relating to peace. And that, for me, just a screaming irony about this whole thing is that one of the four big goals, apparently, in Rumsfeld's plan is to get countries such as Russia and China, well, China specifically, not to be antagonistic towards us, yet absolutely everything that we're doing is making them antagonistic. Speaking of this whole World War III thing, I was thinking in terms of new alliances that have developed globally. For example, Iran. Okay, Russia, China, and Iran are very tight, and they've just gotten closer and developed more military ties, more trade ties, more who knows what over the past year. In a way, our policies have really pushed these people together, you could say together, against the United States. And this is not very helpful, certainly long term. It's really interesting that just recently Russia announced that China would be the third partner in the Russia-Iran nuclear talks. Well, right after that, the U.S. announced that it's going to hold massive war games, the biggest naval exercises in the Asia-Pacific this summer. And they said, quote, because they wanted to provide a deterrent for anyone who would wish us ill, end quote. I mean, they're talking about China. So we just keep pushing this belligerent card when we really need to be looking at something more focused on diplomacy, in my opinion.
We're talking with Heather Vokush about her February 19th piece, World War III or Bust, Implications of a U.S. Attack on Iran. Let's turn to your discussion on Khuzestan province bordering Iraq, which has 90% of Iran's oil, as well as the Straits of Hormuz. Talk about what you mean where you discuss these two regions.
These would be the big prizes in an attack on Iran. One, of course, it would be to stop this oil trading market that would trade in euros. But, I mean, presumably, given the individuals that we have in office, they also would be interested in getting control over Iran's oil. And, of course, if they could do that, then they could influence the whole petro-euro market in and of itself. So this is just my assumption that that would be one huge priority, is to somehow get control over that province. But then, as you mentioned, there also is the issue of the Straits of Hormuz. And that's a little stretch of ocean that borders Iran. And that is the shipping route for a huge proportion of the oil that comes into the world from the Gulf area. And it really would not be that difficult just to block that area and then really threaten the global oil supply. My assumption also is that they would want to somehow secure the Straits of Hormuz so that that could not be used against the United States and to raise energy prices.
I know a lot of people listening to this program frequently read the internet. There has been a story on the internet that mentions CIA Director Porter Goss and an article in the German newspaper Der Spiegel, which reported in December. According to you, Goss told the Turkish government it would be informed of any possible airstrikes against Iran a few hours before they happened. Talk about the implications of Turkey and other allies of the United States in this region.
Well, Turkey is in just a very special position, as it was in the first attack on Iraq that the Bush administration did, primarily just because of where it's located. Turkey shares a border with Iran. And according to Noam Chomsky, Turkey is very, very heavily supported by the U.S. domestic Israeli lobby. And actually, according to Chomsky, 12% of the Israeli air and tank force is stationed in Turkey. And so clearly the United States wants to get Turkey on its side and needs those bases, basically, in order to conduct some kind of attack on Iran. But Turkey also is interested in joining the European Union. I mean, it's between a rock and a hard place as far as what it does. But what we do know is there has been just a massive increase in the number of high-level U.S. visitors to Turkey recently. We can perhaps surmise that it has something to do with Iran.
Headlines in America right now are about the president who has said that he will make sure that America sells major U.S. ports to a company from Dubai. Is it possible that the Bush administration will start to engage in a kind of quid pro quo to collect allies in this region of the world?
Well, I guess that's possible, but I don't know if the port issue is directly in relation to Iran. I would think that, you know, perhaps there are other economic and who knows what issues going on there. Personally, I think it doesn't really make sense because it kind of really sets him up for a lot of controversy, to say the least, domestically. But the issue is regarding what you're saying is U.S. foreign policy. How can we get friends, you know? And so far, at least in the Middle East, it seems to be a lot invested in propaganda. You know, Karen Hughes and her disastrous little adventures over in the Middle East. And most recently, just last week, in fact, Secretary of State Rice requested $75 million on top of $10 million already allocated solely for a propaganda campaign against the Tehran government. But the problem is that U.S. propaganda campaigns in many, you know, parts of the world are just so ham-handed that it ends up making the states, one, look silly, and two, makes people even more suspicious about what's going on, what the U.S. intentions are. And so it seems at this point we want to bribe people or scare them militarily or perhaps, you know, use propaganda. But long-term, clearly this is not the best approach.
Let's talk about what you've said about the stakes and some of the what-ifs you have described and just go through your piece about a possible U.S. military action against Iran. First, let's take a look at what kinds of reactions would immediately appear in both Iraq, Iran, and other countries.
I mean, clearly, Tehran would not just sit there, you know. Well, you know, another thing you have to ask is, under what circumstances would an attack take place? I mean, the U.S. government would have to be absolutely insane to go ahead and attack Iran. However, if Israel were to go and, you know, bomb what they would consider to be a nuclear weapons plant, and then Iran retaliated against Israel, well, then most likely the U.S. would protect Israel. And so we have many different scenarios potential leading to a conflict here. Tehran would, well, they have already promised a, quote, crushing response. And we talked before, they could block the Strait of Hormuz. They could use long-range missiles and try to, you know, perhaps hit Israel. Of course, we've got Shiite Muslim populations. They're a potent force. They're powerful in Saudi Arabia, largely control the governments of Iran and Iraq. And this would clearly incite more activity, if not violence. I said in the article it would also activate perhaps the Lebanese Hezbollah. And so we could be looking at an increase in global terrorism, and certainly this would further endanger U.S. soldiers, you know, on the ground in Iraq. This is certainly not a helpful thing. And then also we talked before about it is pushing Russia, China, Iran, and Muslim countries into each other's arms because they would see us as just so out of control. They would presumably think that some kind of new coalition needs to be created just to stop the U.S. We also have to think about if the states actually did use some kind of nuclear, you know, quote, tactical nuclear weapon in the process, that would be in violation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And so what on earth motivation would other countries have to abide by, you know, global disarmament agreements? And that's yet another Pandora's box that we would be opening in this process. We also have to keep in mind that even if we don't use nuclear weapons in the process, just by bombing some of these nuclear reactors, that would send a radioactive cloud out that could be extremely devastating. In fact, the Oxford Research Group predicted that up to 10,000 people would die if the U.S. bombed Iran's nuclear sites. So the stakes are just so incredibly high that, I mean, clearly calm heads are required right now. And I do believe that each of us, on a very individual level, does have the power to make a difference in this, to stop this train. And I think one thing that's very important is that we acknowledge that this current talk about using a tactical nuclear weapon in Iran, in fact, is not something random that just popped up out of the blue. Very important to realize is that there has been a concerted effort from day one on the part of the Bush administration to make the use of nuclear weapons more feasible. For example, January 2001, we had something called the Rationale and Requirements for U.S. Nuclear Forces and Arms Control. And this served as the basis for the Nuclear Posture Review. And it talked about, for example, it's necessary to use nuclear weapons in certain cases. Then we had the Nuclear Posture Review delivered to Congress in 2001, which stated directly nuclear weapons could be employed against targets able to withstand non-nuclear attack. Now, this was radically different, this concept of using nuclear weapons. Then we had December 11th, 2002, the National Strategy to Combat Weapons of Mass Destruction, again saying that the U.S. can potentially use nuclear weapons. We have something May 2004, Nuclear Weapons Deployment Authorization Presidential Direction. This authorizes the military to continue the deployment of tactical nuclear weapons in Europe, okay? But then it gets really interesting. We've got something called CON Plan, CONPLAN 8022-02. This is November 2003. And this, again, lays out even more clearly that this global strike plan holds the nuclear option. And what I find just fascinating is we've got this Executive Order 13292 issued in March 2003. Mind you, this is the same order that granted Cheney the ability to classify documents. But this order made the items, quote, weapons of mass destruction, unquote, and defense against transnational terrorism classified. Now, what this means is that this nuclear weapons buildup can occur, and the American people don't need to be told about it. And we can see very clearly how there's been this desire to somehow legitimate the use of a nuclear weapon. And so we really do not have the right at this point in time to be surprised that they're thinking about actually potentially using one in Iran.
We have seen just today news of a horrible attack in Iraq where violence has been increasing. We've seen an attack on a major Shiite holy site, a mosque. This is going to have repercussions in the region, but it does bring to mind the risk that Christian fundamentalists in the West and Islamic fundamentalists in the East and in the Middle East will start to see events now proceeding towards a holy war and what has been referred to as the ultimate holy war, Armageddon.
Yes, and what I found fascinating actually in researching this, I didn't know before that Iran's new Shia Islam president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, subscribes to the Shia Islam form of the Messianic Return. And so we have the end times folks in the States waiting for the rapture, but then there is also a messianic return version of Shiite Islam in which the skies turn to flames and blood flows in Baghdad, by the way, and then the hidden imam returns and then creates world peace by establishing Islam as the global religion. And, you know, one could arguably say, well, for heaven's sakes, look at what did happen in Baghdad. Well, we're just one step closer to this happening. We also have the Temple Mount individuals wanting to create the Jewish temple on the site in Jerusalem. And so one could hope that this is not the majority of individuals seeking a holy war, but clearly it is many of the people in power actually do subscribe to belief systems that doesn't make it seem like such a bad thing if there were to be some kind of nuclear blowout in the Middle East. And quite frankly, for me, that makes it even more frightening.
And now that we've frightened ourselves and our audience, and I'm sure that people have already been thinking about all of these potentials, and it is healthy to talk about them, let's talk about what can be done about the situation in America, in Europe, where we're talking with you now.
That's a good thing, you know, because there are steps to positive action that we can take every day. And I would highly suggest that your listeners visit the website www.campaigniran.org. That's one word, campaigniran.org. They've got some really good ideas there. They have a What You Can Do page, for example, and, you know, things like calling radio talk shows or writing letters and opinion pages or things such as that. But they've also got a really interesting article that I would highly recommend on antiwar.com. It's called How to Stop the Planned Nuking of Iran by Jorg Hirsch. What he says is that as it exists now, the full authority for the use of nuclear weapons, the full authority rests with the president, rests with Bush. And so, and he also has the ability to use nuclear weapons preemptively. In and of itself, that must change. And so what Mr. Hirsch recommends is that we change this law, making it at minimum that he must get permission from Congress in order to consider using a nuclear weapon. He comes up with a possible bill that he would like to see passed. This is Jorg Hirsch in How to Stop the Planned Nuking of Iran. And he says, this is what a possible bill could say. Purpose, to affirm the Congress's authority under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 14 of the U.S. Constitution to make rules for the government and regulation of the armed forces and apply such authority to the United States' use of nuclear weapons against non-nuclear weapon states. So what he's saying is that he wants the Constitution to say that Congress must be informed and given authority to approve the U.S. use of nuclear weapons against non-nuclear states. At the very minimum, I believe this is what we should do.
Heather Vokush, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Heather Vokush is author of a February 19th piece that has created a stir on the Internet. World War III or Bust? Implications of a U.S. Attack on Iran is the title. Heather Vokush is presently working on a book for progressives. Her website is heathervokush.com. That's HEATHERWOKUSCH.com. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program was produced in the studios of WHUS Stores. WHUS.org to listen live Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNation.org for transcripts and discussion. Composer Fritz Heed provided today's music.